You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
To cater to constantly shrinking attention spans, pop culture in the age of social media is crafted with primarily two things: extreme close-ups and helicopter shots of famous lives. Now, a perfect example of this would be the sweeping Disney-esque frame of Priyanka Chopra's veil at her wedding. A veil as interminable as the media bites that we've been fed about her rise to international stardom. And then there's that video that Nick Jonas shot of her as she watched a Christmas classic with the open-mouthed glee of a child, seemingly unaware of him. So there you have it, a bird's eye view of her picture-perfect four-princess wedding and an intimate look into her domestic life. And together, they create the impression of what is now passed off as hashtag life goals and an existence that looks enviably good from the outside and feels enviably good from the inside. Are such moments orchestrated or are they for real? Well, we'll never know, but if you recall the May wedding of Meghan Markle and Prince Harry and the presence of Bishop Michael Curry, a black priest who delivered a rousing sermon quoting Martin Luther King Jr. in the whitest of white assemblies, you know that popular culture can be symbolic of many things and can trigger more emotions than just envy. It can show us images of privilege, of course, but also emphasize the importance of representation, of political beliefs that can spin a Nike campaign around the black activism of Colin Kaepernick, of something more important than the compulsive need to just pander to the fame monster that consumes without respite and chomps tirelessly on everything from weddings, funerals, wardrobe malfunctions, public displays of affection, meltdowns, and sometimes on icons who we thought were invulnerable. On this Money Control podcast, Digging Deeper, we review some indelible images from the year gone by. Images of inclusion, representation, tragedy, and ostentatious celebrations.
The Deep Dive podcast series
in pop culture this year.
Let's first begin with a year in an industry that has traditionally thrived on entrenched power structures. The American entertainment industry that this year, post the harvest of rotten fruits hastened by the Me Too movement, came up with the imagery that was not so much about power as about the dilution and distribution of it. And the world was ready to welcome that change, and Google will back that claim. The importance of representation. This year, the list of most Googled films included Ryan Coogler's Black Panther, that Forbes described as a pop culture juggernaut. Lest we forget, this was a Marvel movie led primarily by an African-American cast and became a cultural landmark. As Forbes put it, and we quote, boasting the very best villain in the MCU, an impressive amount of world building and killer costume design, the film managed to feel less like an origin story and more like the first chapter of a bold new sci-fi franchise. The central conflict wasn't really a case of good versus evil, but saw the constraints of tradition clash against the unrelenting pressure of modernity, ending in an intelligent compromise, unquote. Compare this to a film like John Krasinski's A Quiet Place, where an all-white cast lived through a post-apocalyptic horror, and you have two images of resurgence and survivalist horror where the words black and white mean more than just graded contrast. That even E-Online, possibly one of the most unimaginative cliché factories, recognized the shift as no longer subterranean and dedicated an entire piece to it, shows how far this year has gone in its quest for diversity. There was John M. Chu describing his film Crazy Rich Asians thus, and we quote, "This is more than a movie, it's a movement," unquote. And as writer Billy Niles wrote in E! News, and we quote, while it's a lot to ask of any one film that it is a movement, even one that's certainly a watershed moment in terms of Asian representation at the movie theater, it's a sentiment that's become perhaps the defining story of Hollywood in 2018, unquote. Crazy Rich Asians, the adaptation of author Kevin Kwan's novel, reminds Billy, is the first Asian-American-focused studio film in 25 years. Chu told The Hollywood Reporter, and to quote, "To be on the biggest stage with the biggest stakes, that's what we asked for," unquote. And that's what he got. And what he gave in return was a larger-than-life story about protagonists who are usually treated as fillers and secondary characters in big-budget Hollywood films. As the film's team said in not so many words in multiple interviews, the story gave the otherized characters in a culture where they are not the dominant force a chance to show who they are and to give more Asian-American stories a chance to claim their own space. The film has grossed over $162 million worldwide to date, and since E! News gets it, so must Hollywood, that representation matters and it is lucrative to tell more than just one kind of story. As Billy puts it, and we quote, beginning with Black Panther's game-changing blockbuster release at the top of the year, 2018 is proving to be a transformative year for an industry that's generally loath to change. And with a drumbeat for greater representation of traditionally marginalized communities in cinema only growing louder thanks to the year's undeniable successes, it certainly feels as if there's no going back now. It's about damn time. Unquote, and damn right, Billy. What both Black Panther and Crazy Rich Asians did was to decimate the perception that non-white narratives are not saleable, or as Billy puts it, aren't quite universal enough to warrant a place in the modern-day blockbuster machine. If the world saw Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa roar into theatres and simply shrugged at his arrival, it would have been used by studio heads as rationale for keeping their tentpole films lily-white for years to come. Unquote. And as the piece informs us, Black Panther ultimately grossed $1.346 billion, becoming the highest-grossing solo superhero film ever and the ninth highest-grossing film of all time, easily giving director Ryan Coogler the highest-grossing film by a black director in the process. Michael B. Jordan told E! News earlier this year, and we quote, "Seeing how many more of these Black Panthers we'll see. I'm more curious seeing the effects of this movie in the industry and how that's going to change minorities in film and television." Unquote. Girl power that did magic and pulled off heists. Girl squads this year weren't relegated to stories about weddings and dysfunctional family units. They were archetypes of power, as in Ava DuVernay's A Wrinkle in Time, and unapologetic appropriators of male spaces, as in Ocean's 8. And their films cost a lot of money to make and made a lot of money as well. DuVernay is a woman of color, and her cinematic adaptation of Madeleine L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time was budgeted at over $100 million. And as E! News points out, this makes her the first woman of color to helm a blockbuster film for a major studio and a remarkably diverse cast of women that included Storm Reid, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, and as Bill puts it, Oprah freaking Winfrey. Through the film, DuVernay wanted to challenge the idea of who gets to be the hero and told E! News, and we quote, "To be able to make a film where a little black girl gets to fly when I always wanted to do that. All kinds of people deserve to see themselves in these films, and that's what we're trying to do." Unquote. Ultimately, the film made $132 million worldwide and fell short of covering its production cost, but it opened in the number two spot just behind Black Panther, and as Billy says, it gave the industry its first weekend with films directed by African-American filmmakers in the top two spots probably ever. Another genre-busting film was the Warner Brothers all-female cast of Ocean's 8, headed by Sandra Bullock and glittering with superstars like Cate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Mindy Kaling, Sarah Paulson, Helena Bonham Carter, Rihanna, and Awkwafina. Now, a heist film is usually a male-centric enterprise, with women mostly making appearances as diversions and props, but this was not that film. Here, women came to play and to win. And win they did. As E! News informs us, the film opened to $41.6 million in its first weekend, higher than all the three all-male Oceans films to come before it, without adjusting for inflation, and as of press time, has grossed $275.5 million worldwide against a production budget of around $70 million. Billy asks, has it put the final nail in the coffin of the relentless debate over whether female-fronted films work? No, probably not, but it should. Unquote. More than one kind of love. After last year's Oscar-worthy Luca Guadagnino directed Call Me By Your Name, this year, Greg Berlanti's Love, Simon mainstreamed a coming-out and coming-of-age love story about a closeted gay teen. And this wasn't arthouse cinema barely surviving on the festival circuit, but a glossy teenage rom-com produced by 20th Century Fox with all the trappings and privileges that conventional romances get. For Berlanti, as E! News reports, the film was really an answer to the question, what can I do to put something there that wasn't there before? Unquote. Made with a production cost of around $17 million, the film went on to gross $66 million worldwide. The End of Privilege. This year, popular culture examined the question of privilege and accountability, and we will now recount a few of those stories. Privilege, as you know, has many forms. It's about entitlement that comes with race, with fame, with success, and this year saw the end of many stories of privilege, including that of YouTube star Logan Paul, who made light of a hanging corpse in Japan's Aokigahara forest with laughter, along with his companions, and received instant backlash, resulting in YouTube removing his channel from their premium advertising service. This May, the erratic and controversial career graph of actor Roseanne Barr finally came to an end with a racist tweet against Valerie Jarrett, a former senior advisor in the Obama administration and incidentally a black woman. Barr has often supported right-wing conspiracy theories and displayed unsavory behavior, but her tweet, and we quote, "Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby, equals BJ," unquote, was the proverbial straw on the camel's back. Just hours after the tweet was published, ABC cancelled her highly rated show with this statement, and we quote again, "Roseanne's Twitter statement is abhorrent, repugnant and inconsistent with our values, and we have decided to cancel her show," unquote. Roseanne has since then tried to apologize, to cite medication and triggers other than racism to explain her behavior. Statements like, and we quote, "If you're going to take Ambien, do not drink a beer. Only drink wine with Ambien," unquote, haven't really helped. And it is unlikely that she will get another chance to misuse her privilege as a white woman in a nation already divided along race lines. That a show named after her continued without her as The Conners drove the final nail in her professional coffin. The aftershocks of the Me Too movement continue to be felt this year as well, with actress Uma Thurman launching a blistering attack on Quentin Tarantino in February of the year for forcing her to perform a car stunt. And later, damning footage emerged of an old Howard Stern interview showing Tarantino trivializing rape allegations against Roman Polanski, who had been charged in 1977 with the assault of a 13-year-old girl. Lack of sensitivity is the first symptom of privilege, and even so-called life coaches are not impervious to apathy. Case in point is author and media personality Tony Robbins, who accused women in a California gathering of using the Me Too movement to gain validation and attention, and how the movement was hurting men. What was most damning was Robbins' physical intimidation of a woman who answered him back. Juno Diaz, author, Dominican-American writer and creative writing professor at MIT, was also asked this year to account for inappropriate behavior towards female writers and students. And when James Franco accepted the Golden Globe for his performance in The Disaster Artist this year, wearing a Time's Up pin, he got called out for faking solidarity that he had not shown towards women. Soon, many accounts of Franco's sexual misconduct appeared in a Los Angeles Times report and emphasized once again that appropriating a cause without believing in it can ultimately backfire. Director James Gunn was dropped by Walt Disney Studios after old tweets painted him as insensitive to charged subjects like sexual abuse and the Holocaust, among others. Like comic actor Kevin Hart, who recently had to step down from his Oscar hosting duties after old tweets targeting the LGBTQ community surfaced, Gunn too attributed his provocative tweets to a time when he had not evolved as a person, but could not ultimately get back in Disney's good books. Then there was also actor Aziz Ansari, who's still lying low after charges of sexual misconduct erupted against him in January of this year. And if there is one image that sums up the year when privilege in at least some cases came to an end and completed the trajectory from crime to punishment, it was that of Bill Cosby in handcuffs after being found guilty of 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault in April 2018 and being sentenced to 3 to 10 years in prison on the 25th of September this year. Weddings and funerals. 2 Republican funerals mark the end of an era this year, that of Senator John Sidney McCain III and former President George Herbert Walker Bush, who died on the 30th of November. The legacies of both men are complicated, especially Bush Sr. will forever be overshadowed by his victory over Iraq after the invasion of Kuwait, even though other achievements like the collapse of the USSR and the unification of Germany are attributed to him. Charges of sexual misconduct when he was in his 90s also reminded the world that powerful men must never be considered above reproach. Now, John McCain was a quintessential Republican, a man of faith, staunch family values, a war hero, but as Rebecca Solnit wrote in The Guardian, McCain was a fascinating, frustrating character who often expressed high ideals and as often betrayed them. She writes, and we quote, "With his death, the last shreds of conscience in his party have gone, though they were often only present in him in flickers of conflicted, contradicted impulses. McCain seemed to believe in a gallant idea of what a soldier, a politician, and an American should be. His life was a public performance of his meandering path to and from and around those ideals, and those trajectories were fascinating to watch, with the sense of some Faustian private struggle behind the public drama. He was often called a maverick and embraced the term. The term is now used to mean a dissident, an untamed soul, someone who doesn't run with the herd. But McCain's orthodoxies jostled with his unorthodoxies, and he often ended up back in the Republican corral with the rest of the conservative cattle. Or on the other side, after all, regretting Sarah Palin, regretting his consent to the Iraq War, which he admitted was a disaster. At this point in political history, even the admission of error is an endangered species. Unquote. What the peace holds against McCain is his devout faith in war and the military, and the way he voted to condemn millions to the loss of their health insurance in the Trump era. As Rebecca says, and we quote, "What captivated me at times was a sense of McCain as a tragic figure, someone who knew what he ought to do when he was not doing it, as well as when he was." Unquote. From politics, let's gravitate to the arts. Well, as Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin's politically charged funeral showed us, genuine artistic legacies are about being woke even before it is safe to do so, and to continue contributing to the conversation about equality even after you are gone. The very public success stories and very private demons and tragic suicides of designer Kate Spade and author and charismatic television host Anthony Bourdain reminded us that the optics of empire building and dealing with the unattended and ever-expanding dark holes in mental health are two different things, and that the conversation around mental health and depression must be normalized and destigmatized.
The Deep Dive podcast series
in pop culture this year.
We must end this piece with mention of the wedding of the year, when Prince Harry wed Meghan Markle amid the goosebump-inducing cadences of a gospel choir's rendition of Stand By Me, proving the point that we began this piece with. Representation matters.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.